The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
He's a gorilla of destiny, a Bullet Club OG, continuing on the legacy of the most feared name in all of wrestling. From Tonga to Japan to America, you are now entering Tama's Island with your host, the babyface heel, Tama Tonga.
And folks, it is that time again. It's Tuesday. It's November 16th. We are live on Twitch. We are live on Tama's Island for another jam-packed episode of Wrestling and World Talk. Because, folks, it's been a hell of a weekend. We will get into it in a second, but let me introduce you to the folks that we have joining us on the podcast this week. As always, I'm the Culture Vulture, the Folk City Hustler, the Disruptor, whatever you want to call me. I'm Ross W. Berman, the fourth. I'm your certified lover boy, and we've got... joining us.
It gets longer and longer every week,
I keep adding stuff, baby.
You just keep adding shit.
I keep adding stuff. I'm whatever the listeners need me to be.
Certified lover boy, I haven't heard before, and I like that one.
Who the hell certified you?
I'm biting. Drake. Drake gave me my diploma.
Blue mark before you start claiming that shit, man.
Fair. Well, joining me as always, we've got Karen. Karen, how are you doing this lovely weekend?
Well, I just had one heck of a laugh, so I am doing fantastic. Glad to be back.
Awesome. And John is back on the podcast with us. How are you, John?
Man, I'm just bummed I'm uncertified.
All you gotta do is listen to CLB, the new Drake album, and that's the crash course in certified lover boys. But it would be remiss if I didn't introduce the fourth man joining us today. He is very busy with World Tag League right now. He is currently in Toyama. Folks, please welcome Tama Tonga. Tama, how are you feeling?
What's up, guys? Hey, I'm the bad boy. I'm the good bad guy, the certified good bad guy with a blue check. All right, welcome. Hey, thank you for having me back on the podcast. It's been a hell of a week here in Japan. I'm glad to join you guys, and let's get this thing popping, Ross.
We're thrilled to have you because we got a bunch to talk about this weekend. Shout out to everyone that's in the chat over on twitch.tv/Tama's Island. Shout out to all the subscribers over at patreon.com/Tama's Island. And shout out to you, the folks that are listening right now to this. Let's get into it. Earlier this year, Jay White and Kenny Omega had a tense stare down on Impact. It was seen as like the big opening to the Forbidden Door. Kenny Omega was AEW champion. He was also Impact champion. Jay White was never openweight champion. By the end of November 13th, 2021, both men had lost those titles, and they'd lost those titles in the same night. AEW Full Gear, Kenny Omega was defeated by Hangman Page in the main event. Hangman Page, now the AEW champion. And then in the main event of New Japan Battle in the Valley, Tomohiro Ishii broke the never open weight records, becoming a record breaking 6-time never open weight champion, defeating Jay White in a hell of a match. I mean, we got a lot to talk about. So I want to talk first and foremost about Jay White, because he's had a rough year, man. His year started with a 50-minute loss to Kota Ibushi in the Tokyo Dome. He He ebbed the flow a little bit by winning the never open weight championship from Hiroshi Tanahashi earlier in the year. But then he wasn't in the G1. He's been on Impact from time to time. He's been on New Japan Strong from time to time. And now Tomohiro Ishii. Oh boy, got a little echo there, but yeah, it's all good. But he lost the never open weight title to Ishii, and it does beg that question of what's going on with Jay White? What is happening with Jay White? I'm going to throw it to Karen first because I know she was up watching Battle in the Valley. What did you think of the main event, and what did you think of the title switch?
Well, I enjoyed the Japanese commentary, and I actually watched it the day after because it started at 11 p.m. East Coast time, and I'm, you know, I like to go to bed at like a solid 10 o'clock, especially waking up early. But on Japanese commentary, when the match concluded, Tomohiro Ishii, the Stone Pitbull, has a brand new title and a brand new nickname. His new nickname is the J-Killer.
Wow. Ooh.
The Japanese commentary pulled no punches on this match, but he's like, ooh, he's the Jay White killer, Tomohiro Ishii.
Oof.
No.
Painful.
It was
cold-blooded. Dang.
It was ice cold. So, but the match was outstanding. Hard-hitting, as expected. Any match with Ishii, it's just, whew. But it frees him up to do other things.
Yes. Yes, it does. No, and it frees up Jay White to do other things. It does. And I think it also does, it adds a little bit of that never open weight legacy back to the title. Like we've said on the podcast many times, as the IC title went away and the world title was kind of brought out, the never belt was kind of elevated into that Intercontinental Championship position. And that made a lot of people who are fans of the never open weight style afraid that they aren't going to get those, you know, for lack of a better term, those pit bull matches. We've called it the pit bull division. But now Tomohiro Ishii, once again, the never champion. So it's very clear that whoever faces the never champion next is going to be getting that tough, strong, hard stone pit bull style. So it's bittersweet because I've said it many times, a big Jay White fan, I'm a big Jay White supporter. I think he was doing great things with the belt, but I understand the appeal of Tomohiro Ishii, never champion, kicking ass, taking names, and apparently showing up on Dynamite this Wednesday, teaming up with Orange Cassidy. Lots going on for Ishii. But John, what'd you think of Jay White, Tomohiro Ishii, the main event of Battle in the Valley?
First of all, like I told you, if you're not going in to win, you're not going to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think last episode, I only live episode to episode. Last episode, we talked about how, you know, he just wants to put on a great match, winning his, you know, secondary. Well, obviously that shows. And the other thing is blood type O supremacy. Once again, Tomohiro Ishii and I, blood brothers, both of us, them O types killing it. So boom.
I was going to say, that's not the first time an O type has won, apparently, in New Japan, as John has been keeping us up to date with all of the blood types of the various New Japan wrestlers.
Listen, or at least is there for
I was going to say. I was going to say, or at least the ones who have opted to put that information on New Japan, or NJPW1972.com.
The thing is, dude, the match was wild, though. It was. I saw it, but it was clean enough. I mean, it wasn't like, it was like, you can't say he didn't. I mean, they both pushed it, right? But you can't say it was anything other than a clean dang win.
No, there was no low. I mean, don't get me wrong. Jay was as vicious as he usually is. He was throwing, you know, Ishii into the railing and stuff
dirty.
Like that.
But I mean,
there's
that's not,
no, exactly. But there's no job, no one was getting, no one got garroted. Yeah. There was no there was no interference. Like you're right. It was a straight down the middle contest. Ishii, I think, had a little bit. I think Jay White kind of screwed himself up by telling Ishii that if he lost, he was never going to get that never title again. Because I think it lit that much more of a fire under Ishii to prove that, hey, this is my title. Don't tell me when I can and can't challenge for it.
The dude had a chance to, like, not just pound the guy, but pound him like 6 feet under.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get that chance, somebody that vicious, they're going to fucking take it.
Yes.
And it was fucking wild.
It was absolutely, it was a wild, wild match. As we said, Battle in the Valley from this past Saturday. Yeah, it was Saturday? Yeah, it was Saturday. It's been a very long weekend. I'll explain why in a second. But yeah, Saturday, Battle in the Valley in San Jose. They also made some announcements that New Japan is going to be coming back to North America in 2022. And then also last night, they made an announcement that they'll be returning to Los Angeles on December 9th. So lots of chances to catch New Japan strong as it keeps welcoming fans back. And you can finally get a taste of that show that has been, it's been really bubbling up now that the fans are there and people can actually are really starting to talk about New Japan Strong. And it's being carried by guys like Tom Lawler, had a fantastic showing. But one guy that I do want to talk about, if we're going to talk New Japan Strong, we're going to talk Battle in the Valley and all the stuff around it, Fred Rosser. Showing a completely new side to himself in some of these promos, threatening to come to Tom Lawler's house and murder him, which is what from what I can tell, the lips said, because they had to mute his promo on New Japan World, because again, he threatened to go to someone's house and murder them.
Sorry, but is that
blow
now,
him up,
now,
right?
Now,
blow him up and murder
yeah,
him.
Yeah, it's something like, yeah.
The lip syncing I was able to read was kids was in there involved some.
I was
now,
reading
if
the.
If it's a no DQ match, is that allowed?
Technically, yes. If it's a no DQ match, that's allowed. If it's not, that's not allowed. Right. That's the kind of thing that you need hold harmless agreements to get that kind of thing together. But no, if you haven't seen it, go back, watch Fred Rosser's promo. You can either read his lips or read Rocky Romero's face as he's just kind of standing next to him while Fred goes off. But it's kind of the reason I bring it up is it's kind of the for lack of a better term, the linchpin in this new Fred Rosser that he has brought to New Japan Strong. Like, he's really wanted to prove that he's not the Darren Young of old. He's been busting out. He's got a new move called the Gut Feeling. That's the old Emerald Flosion, Misawa's old finishing move. He's angry. He's mad. He's full of fire. I mean, Karen, what do you think of this new Fred Rosser, of New Japan Strong's Fred Rosser?
I like this new Fred Rosser because it's living up to the conversation we had last time that baby faces can get pissed off.
Yes.
And in Philadelphia, when they held him down and cut his hair in the middle of the ring, I was like, this man better, just like turn it to 25 and just go. And then he went.
Yep.
Rocky Romero was in the background sweating to death.
Are you still a baby face though if you make death threats? I feel like that's a little bit of an alignment change, right?
Brian Pillman.
He could be chaotic neutral at that point, but one of those things where it's just they crossed a line.
Yeah.
And if you cross the line, you hit the right button. Sometimes that button's the explosion button and kaboom.
I mean, Arn threatened to paint a guy's paint the streets with a guy's brains, and everyone went, "Yeah, Arn is great." Hell, Brian Pillman pulled a gun on Stone Cold Steve Austin. People haven't stopped talking about it. Really, home invasions and threats of murder are as old as wrestling itself at this point.
Seth Rollins just went over and stalked Edge's house, right?
There you go, exactly.
Drink his orange juice and shit. Like, is there a fucking more egregious thing than to walk into a goddamn man's house and drink his orange juice?
Well, you know, according to Fred Rosser, there is.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't know, man. Threaten me all you want, but you touch my OJ, it's over.
Indeed.
They're also talking about blowing up people and shit.
Yeah.
Killing kids.
Yeah, that might be worse. That's a little worse. Yeah.
He was in front of his kids. I think
in front of his
kids. He left the kids out of it.
All I saw was kids. I was like, he's home.
Yeah, no. If I read it correctly, it was, I'm going to drag you out of your house and...
Yep.
In front of your kids.
Yeah,
he keeps goats. You don't know. Maybe he's got goats.
it's like True Detective season 2. You know, sometimes you get a little overboard. But look, like I said, I would rather have a Fred Rosser that's a little too angry than a guy that you don't see that fire behind. You know what I mean? Like this is wrestling. It's an aggressive sport, and so I'm all for it. I just want them to drop the unedited audio so that I can sample it for a drill track, because that would be a perfect introduction to a song. You get the bells in there as he's kind of fading out. Like I heard the whole thing, but it definitely feels like New Japan Strong making some big moves. Not only did Fred Rosser threaten to murder Tom Lawler, Will Ospreay, as we talked last week, has been kind of running his mouth. He's got a title belt that he bought from the Tokan shop, and he's calling himself the real world champion. He's He's been fighting. Here's the thing. He's been fighting young lions. He's been fighting guys like Clark Connors and Ren Narita and the LA Dojo guys. And we've been talking about on the podcast, Tommy, you even had some choice words for Ospreay about the fact that he's not really defending a lot at the moment. And Ospreay seemingly stepped up after Okada beat Buddy Matthews in a damn fine semi-main event. Ospreay showed up. He had his belt with him. Okada had his belt with him. And they kind of had a battle over whose Fugazi championship is more important. Shingo Takagi was on commentary the whole time, reminding them that, hey, I'm here and I'm the actual one with the belt. But it does
Poor
not
Shingo,
change.
Man. Got no respect for Shingo in his game. Nobody...
They cuckolded Shingo while he was on commentary. That's fucked up.
I feel so right? bad for him. I feel like, so.
It's like making a dude. It's like making a dude direct a porno with his wife in it.
My champion,
right? Yeah. Disrespect is fucking real, y'all.
He's like, especially the way Ospreay and Okada were talking, like they made it sound like the January 5th match is going to be Okada Ospreay, and so Shingo's just standing there like, one of you has to beat me first, so sit down, shut the hell up.
What's that? What, you guys ever seen the Office with the guy they moved down yep. to the basement? That's like Shingo, but guys, my stapler, I'm the champion.
Eventually, someone's gonna get confused, and the fake title's the one that's actually gonna get defended, and then he'll be the champion for like 10 years, but nobody will remember.
Shingo's gonna be like, I'm gonna burn this place down.
to be fair, if we're talking Office Space, that dude did end up burning the place down, so not
hey,
count
man,
Shingo out.
Don't mess with the red swing line. Nobody yep. messes with the red swing line.
Just in case he ever goes crazy, just everybody's like, I like Shingo. I think he's a cool guy. And you know, yep. I got nothing bad to
yeah.
say.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy because I feel like if Shingo's the real champ, right? And that should be the last battle, like instead of on the fifth, right? Mm-hmm. So you got the fourth and the fifth. What do you guys feel about that Okada and Ospreay's match being moved behind? So it'll be Shingo and Okada first, right?
Yep, it's Shingo and Okada, and then Ospreay takes on the winner of Shingo Okada.
I feel like since Ospreay's been running around saying that he's the real champ, and he beat Shingo, I feel like Shingo needs to put an ass whooping on him to solidify that, to make that point across, I'm the real champ. That I feel like that's the only way they could cover that.
Yeah.
But to drop that, you know, but I mean, what do you guys think? Cause
I'm kind of with you. Cause like, here's the thing. I think Ospreay does have a claim. He was not pinned for the belt. He didn't submit for the belt. He was injured. It was vacated, but this happens a lot in UFC. A guy will get popped for an AD or for a USADA test, or they'll get injured or whatever. And so you'll have an extra champion from time to time. Mm-hmm. I think.
Hey, but this is not popping. This is injury. Usually you vacate that, right?
Yeah. Being injured is kind of like a loss in and of itself, unless, unless it happened, maybe you were skateboarding out in the parking lot and you broke your tibia or some shit. That's different. But like, you get injured in the ring, you're the champion. It gets vacated. You don't get it back.
Yes. No. I'm with y'all on this.
I got no problem with him doing number one contender shit. But once he starts pissing all over the belt by bringing in his own fake one, I think he loses his claim at that point.
And I think especially since Okada hasn't fully done the same thing, because the IWGP that he's got represents the G1 win, but they're both running around with championships that aren't necessarily championships. I think those two should settle it first. Then the winner gets Shingo. Shingo's had a damn fine year, you know?
Now here's my thing though. Like even Okada's claim, right? You got, I think there's a little bit fucked up situation here too, because Okada didn't really win. You know what I'm saying?
It's true. He still needs to beat Ibushi. Like,
yeah, he didn't really win, and he brought back a dead belt. Mm-hmm. Like, your claim isn't really, you're not really standing on solid ground. You're standing on mud right now, because you're saying you're the G1 champion, but you didn't really win though. You know what I'm saying? Like, you ain't beat him 1-2-3. He got hurt. Just like Ospreay got hurt. So there's all these like situations that need to be done right. And I don't think anybody has a real solid claim to anything right now except Shingo, who rightfully was passed down. He was the second in line. and he has the most right now, I feel.
He won the belt. He actually beat Okada. Like, it's not like they awarded Shingo the belt, but you pretty much sound like everyone that's not Okada and Osprey in New Japan right now, because Shingo keeps saying it, Naito keeps saying it, a bunch of people are like, just confiscate Osprey's belt. What the hell's going on? Like, there is this cloud hanging over Wrestle Kingdom, especially since we keep talking about January 4th and January 5th. There's also January 8th that we're going to have to, at some point, deal with in Yokohama. And so it feels like even by January 5th, this isn't necessarily going to be figured out. It's like you said, whoever wins that world title, I feel like, is going to have to deal with Kota Ibushi, because Ibushi doesn't feel like he lost. He was ready to keep going in that match with, you know, one arm hanging off out of its socket. And so Ibushi, once he's healed, I feel like is going to want to get right back in that mix. And while I believe that all three of the guys that are currently in the world title mix have a claim to it, if we're going to do that, Ibushi does kind of have a claim to see if he can get that G1 final back.
Wait. Why do you say Ibushi has a claim to it?
Because it's like you said, Okada didn't really beat Ibushi. Ibushi beat Ibushi.
Okay.
And so, therefore, Okada still needs to get that if, as we said, an injury does count as a loss, but he needs he needs to beat him 1-2-3, I feel like, for a lot of people to feel like Ibushi's claim is done.
All right, Karen, I'm going to get to you in a second.
All right.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
I feel, okay, I know what you're saying about Ibushi, but he's going to have to just wait. Get that. He's going to have to wait until, let's say, New Japan Cup.
Okay.
You got to earn. I mean, it was a tournament. You were in a tournament, you know, and you got hurt. You weren't the champion, you know, where you get first contender, you know. But, like, you're in a tournament, and if you got hurt in a tournament at the final, I mean, you're hurt, but – you know, there's another tournament for you to come back and really run through that gauntlet again and get that claim to be, you know, a champion. But I don't think you should get skipped. You know, I'm just saying,
Okada, this ain't Karate Kid.
Yeah, you know, just like Okada, he didn't, like, to me, I mean, you didn't beat no Ibushi. I mean, for all we know, Ibushi could have beaten you if he didn't get hurt.
But he lost because he got hurt. I mean, if Ibushi's got a claim, then Ospreay has a claim, and I can't entertain that. So,
okay, that's fair. You see, my thing is between Ospreay, Ibushi, Okada, and Shingo. Well, not Shingo. I'm actually going to leave him out of this group.
Shingo's the actual champion.
You don't know, but no, that's not my point. Ospreay, Okada, and Ibushi are the three guys who it feels like New Japan management just let them do whatever. Okada's like, give me the IWGP belt. They give him the IWGP belt. Ibushi wants to unify the titles. They unify the titles. Osprey, don't get me wrong, they have. I don't think they've given him as much as they've given the other two, but they haven't confiscated that title yet. And so, like, I'm gonna assume that they're they gave him the official match on January 5th.
Where's the title police at, man? We exactly. Got the title police.
And so that's
you need title enforcers. That's what you need.
Yeah, and so that's why there's part of me that's like, if Ibushi asks to be in that mix, I feel like New Japan management will be like, yeah, sure, go for it. Why not? It's you're Ibushi. We love you, buddy.
I feel like Bullet Club is open for hire right now, right? Like, they could just hire Bullet Club to enforce all these dollars title bullshit. You guys would be fair about it, right? And impartial.
Of course.
Yes. We're always fair in our dealings.
I'll personally guarantee it. 100%. I'll personally guarantee it.
That's a blood guarantee from John.
We typos don't fuck around, you know. Ask Stone Pitbull, you know?
Aaron, what were you trying to say earlier before I cut you off?
That's all right. So I'm gonna go back to Ren Narita because I love me some Ren Narita. He called Ospreay out and said, you were injured. If you were a real champion, you should have surrendered the belt. New Japan made a choice to vacate it, but not confiscate it. And he went to LA with the belt. He's gone to every other show since then with the belt. He's gone to the UK with the belt.
He tried to technically make
the
Narita match.
The IWGP committee. Why aren't they being like, yeah, about that, son? No, back of the line. I feel bad for Shingo because Shingo is the actual champion. He put the company on his back the entire summer. He's been around. He was in the G1. I think he was in the G1. He was in the G1, right? It's all blurring together at this point.
Shingo? Yeah, he was in the G1.
So it's one of those things where it's just like, we talked about Ospreay getting his golden ticket and sauntering in, but he should not be main eventing night two against Okada. He's got a fake belt. Got a brief or a belt in lieu of a briefcase. They couldn't just repaint Jay White's briefcase from last year. I don't know what's going on with that. So why aren't they having their little standoff on night one?
Facing
the actual champion
right
on night two.
But right? here's the thing. It's not Ospreay Okada on night two. It's Ospreay versus the winner of Takagi versus Okada on night one.
But I know
Takagi still has a chance. Like, there is still a chance that Takagi beats Okada for a second time. Then finally
defend against. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right. Like,
okay.
It's backward. The way they have it set right now, it's backwards.
It's backwards. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Either on night one, Ospreay has to fight Shingo, or Ospreay has to fight Okada.
Okay, I'm sending an email. I'm going to tell them they got that shit
because
backwards.
Shingo is the actual champion, and they're treating him like third place.
Yeah,
the company where he's supposed to be at the top.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
Man, does anybody know how to start one of those change.org petitions? We'll get this shit fixed.
Yeah. No, it's
and fill out a comment card on their website.
Oh yeah. Well, fill it out. Everybody fill out a comment card right now.
Leave the poor New Japan social media guys alone. Yep. Don't harass them.
They're dealing with enough right now.
That's my take on it.
No, and it's a fair point. I do agree with the idea that Okada and Ospreay should be settling their issue before anyone starts wrestling for the belt. But I also do see the argument that since Okada won the G1, that the G1 winner is supposed to, in some philosophical way, challenge for the belt on January 4th. I don't know if necessarily the IWGP committee or the G1 committee or whoever oversees the G1 win has quite adapted to the two-night Wrestle Kingdom yet, because so far except for Jay White's year, pretty much every year there's been a defense on January 4th and a defense on January 5th. A lot of the times it's been the champion having to defend two nights in a row, or in the case of Double Gold Dash, you know, they're kind of creating a new champion.
Yeah, the past 2 years has been a little, I think the whole situation is with it's been fucked. I'm not gonna blame that on the pandemic. I'm not gonna put that on a pandemic because
that was pre-pandemic.
This has been kind of like screwy, man. And I don't know what's going on. I just see the disrespect towards Shingo, not only from, you know, Will Ospreay or the wrestlers, but also from the company.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just like, yo, you know, this is how you treat your champ? That's kind of fucked up.
Well, not just how they treat the champ. This is how they treat the guy who stepped up after the last right. champ was injured. Because like if Takagi was just like a champion who won the belt and he was one of many champions, that it would still be disrespectful. But especially because of the way he's stepped up in the past year, and especially because of the way that he's really been carrying this company, it does feel very weird that he doesn't get the privilege that Okada gets, the privilege that Ibushi or Osprey or any of the other kind of like top guys, so to speak, in New Japan have been getting. And Shingo, I think he damn well deserves that, especially after the year he's had. I'm still holding out that he wins on night one, he wins on night two, and he finally redeems the year he's had. But man, they're making it hard on him. They're making it real, real hard on the champion.
For sure, man.
Yeah, and it's been, to be fair, a very busy time in New Japan. So they might be waiting to figure this out until the end of all of the stuff that's going on. Because like I said, Battle in the Valley was one of many shows on Saturday. If you were trying to keep up with all...
Wait. Before we forget, I'm going to jump into something that you brought up earlier that I had no clue about. And, somebody mentioned here. What did you say that Jay White and Kenny Omega did a face-off? Did I hear that right?
Back on Impact Wrestling, back at like I want to say spring or
back
summer.
In the day. Gotcha.
Yeah, that's
gotcha,
what cause that's gotcha. That's how I was opening it up because this is
how did I miss this?
No, this Saturday was the ballad of Kenny and Jay. Like it was really those two who had that stare down in Impact, being like, "Hey, we are the Forbidden Door." Now they are both without titles. I mean, Kenny's still got the AAA Championship, but for how much longer is to be determined.
Who is AAA?
Yeah.
They both fucked around and found out.
Exactly. but yeah, it was a jam-packed weekend for New Japan. They had Battle in the Valley. They also had a damn fine episode of New Japan Showdown featuring Chris Dickinson versus Minoru Suzuki and Best of Super Juniors, also World Tag League. It's been a very, very packed weekend. And then also AEW Full Gear on top of it. So before we end up spending the entire hour talking about the Wrestle Kingdom kerfuffle, the quagmire at the top of the card, before we move on from Battle in the Valley, I want to send some good vibes to Chris Dickinson, who suffered just a heinous hip injury in a tag match Battle in the Valley. It sounds like he's already taking to physical training like a duck to water, but we definitely want to send some good vibes to it's a terrible time to get an injury that severe. But every time he's come back from injury, he's come back strong and ready to kick ass, so he's going to be unstoppable after this one. But yeah, shout out to Dickinson, shout out to everyone that kicked ass, took names at Battle in the Valley. It was a damn fine show. Also, shout out to Buddy Matthews. Before we move on from that, Buddy Matthews making his New Japan debut. Karen's already applauding, so I kind of want to throw it to her. What'd you think of Okada, the Rainmaker versus Buddy Matthews?
Well, it was really cute that they kind of had matching gear. Like the color scheme was exactly the same. But we talked about previously, from the moment he got released, New Japan was the place I wanted to see him.
Mm-hmm.
It sucked for me that I couldn't be in San Jose to watch it live, but I think if he is to become a permanent member of the roster, he will do exceptionally well in New Japan and New Japan Strong.
I'm with you, because like when he was in WWE, he was always like the New Japan fans WWE superstar. Like he was the one doing the V-Trigger, he would do the Stormbreaker. Like pretty much you could always tell in his 205 Live matches what New Japan show Buddy Murphy had watched like the week before.
Well, and his finisher is the Murphy's Law is a whale hunter.
Exactly.
So Shingo's finishing move made in Japan.
Yes, it is. And so it's nice to see him in this atmosphere for once, because like, and now because he's not the only one doing the New Japan moves, so to speak, he's now able to really show who he is as a wrestler, as opposed to like his influences. And I think this really made a good case for Buddy Murphy, Buddy Matthews, the independent star. And you're spot on about the color scheme. I spent the entire match thinking like, hey, Buddy Matthews would be okay in Chaos. Like he kind of fit right alongside Okada there. Like it felt like a tryout match. I could also
Chaos sucks.
I know. I was about to say, I could also see him in Bullet Club if we're going to be real, real honest.
No. I don't know.
He wouldn't fit.
Nah, he doesn't fit Bullet Club. Nah.
If I could also in Chaos, he wouldn't fit in Bullet Club.
I could also see him in L.I.J. I've just got visions of Sugar Plums dancing in my head. I don't know. It definitely feels like Buddy Matthews showed out against Okada. He obviously did not get the win, but it does feel like he would be a great addition to really anyone's roster at this point. But New Japan especially, it feels like some place that he's wanted to be for a while now. And also, speaking of people showing up,
I guess I can see him in Chaos, huh?
A little bit, yeah.
I'm trying to think of what scarf would fit in, like, and his attitude would be more Chaos.
Yeah, he's a little more. Don't get me wrong. I think you guys could make him. I've seen him be angry. I've seen him be a bad guy. But he does kind of seem a little bit more respectful in his post WWE character. But speaking of post WWE appearances at Battle in the Valley, Jonah Rock, the former Bronson Reed, is back in New Japan. He attacked Juice Robinson. He had a showdown. He had a stare down with Moose, which leads me to believe that he'll finally make it to Impact. He was originally supposed to be at Bound for Glory back in October, but immigration issues kept that from happening. But I'm gonna throw to you, John. What'd you think of Bronson, or the former Bronson Reed, Jonah Rock, making his return to New Japan? He was on the Australian tour, but now he's here proper. It seems.
It seems like, I mean, he's kind of a destructor, right? Yep. I mean, he's just kind of just a plow. I think that there's kind of a lot of that going on right now, and I don't know actually where he fits in. I hope he doesn't kind of get lost in the shuffle after a while. Sometimes, especially in NJPW, it seems like if you're too big, and that's kind of, I don't want to say that's all he's got. I mean, the dude's talented. Mm-hmm. But if that's just kind of like all you got, they tend to book you a certain way, and you know, that's kind of how you're going to get stuck. I hope he finds some versatility. If I had to give him some advice, obviously he listens to this podcast, so, you know, I would find some versatility in both his moveset and also, you know, how he presents himself.
And that's from Coach John,
by the way, Coach, who last week, Coach Tamatanga, by telling him he should win matches, and then he won his tag match. Yep. I'm just saying, people should listen to me. That's all.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. All right. Coach John bringing up a very good point that, Jonah, he does need to kind of, especially with guy, you know, because Jeff Cobb, I think, has been carrying the super heavyweight banner in New Japan right now.
Yeah.
And this might be because I spent so many years watching WWE, but there is part of me that's like, they need to have more than one super heavyweight, so that way Cobb isn't just, that way it's not only Cobb being the kaiju, so to speak, the big ass destroyer. And so, and like,
that's
I feel
why
like,
I feel maybe it is, maybe that's why I feel that way, because that is kind of like what goes on with Jeff Cobb. And yep. Maybe if there were more quote unquote Jeff Cobbs, maybe it wouldn't be so bad.
Exactly, because he's a quick guy. Don't get me wrong, he is a big guy, but he's also a speedy powerhouse. And so I would not be surprised to see Jonah Rock kind of pick up some of that super heavyweight slack. Like I do think that he's the kind of I kind of disagree. I think he's the kind of heavyweight New Japan has needed for a little bit. Like he poses a threat. I don't know. Maybe I'm still just. It's a recency bias after watching him kick Juice's ass in that brief little dust up, but he does seem to have some viciousness, and he also seems like he's ready to make a point. Like if you watch that promo he cut, he's not here to fuck around. What do you think, Karen, of Jonah's debut or return? I'm sorry, he's been in New Japan before.
He wouldn't be a good fit for Chaos, but if him and Mikey Nichols could reunite and be TMDK and eventually convince Shane Thorne to leave WWE and be Shane Haste again, I'd be happy. Mm-hmm. But before he was in New Japan in the Australia tour, he was also in Pro Wrestling Noah. Mm-hmm. So Suzuki-gun would be the perfect place for a new monster.
There you go.
Lest we forget, we also have the super heavyweight that is Fale, who is finally back.
Yep. Exactly.
Oh, those two should butt heads.
And if we're talking about Suzuki-gun, they've lost some bigger heavyweights over the past like year. Lance Archer is still in North America with AEW. Don't get me wrong, Davey Boy Smith Jr. might show back up now that he's been released from WWE. But also, you know, they can't bring back Iizuka. He was a big ass dude as well. So Suzuki-gun could use a big ass motherfucker, for lack of a better term, like Jonah Rock. I'm stoked for him because I know that he's been kind of champing at the bit since he got released from WWE to make a name for himself. Like I said, he was supposed to be at Bound for Glory in October. Immigration issues kind of held him back from that, and so it seems like he's ready to come out of that starting gate swinging. But yeah, a lot of news coming out of Battle in the Valley. A hell of a show. Like I said, they'll be coming back to the Hollywood, Vermont on December 9th, and then we'll be having it's not necessarily a tour, but they will be back in January, they'll be back in February, and they'll be back in March to do some tapings in Los Angeles, St. Petersburg / Tampa, and one other place that is Seattle.
Seattle was
the last one. And so those are going to be the New Japan, that's going to be the New Japan Strong schedule. They just did a taping of Detonation on Monday, but I think that covers the North American front of New Japan. So let's talk about Best of Super Juniors. Let's talk about Tag League, because I'm gonna start with Super Juniors, because this is not your father's Super Juniors. I'm gonna go through the list of people that are undefeated so far in Super Juniors competition. We have Sho, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and Doki. Everyone else has either lost one or lost both of them, but the three that are up at the top right now are Kanemaru, Doki, and Sho. And so it definitely feels like, and we're only a couple of shows into it, so still plenty could change, but it feels like El Desperado a little bit behind the eight ball. He's lost to Sho, he's lost to Ishimori. Bullet Club kind of being a thorn in his side right now. Yo, not having an easy time in the tournament right now. He lost in under 5 minutes to Hiromu Takahashi, then was beaten soundly the next night. It hasn't been your typical Best of Super Juniors so far. A lot of the sort of lesser known juniors are really making a name for themselves. I love it. I'm stoked. You know, if you've listened to this podcast, you know I'm a Doki fan. You know that I love me some underserved juniors.
Doki for Doki.
Absolutely. Doki, Doki, Doki. Oi, oi, oi. Yeah. But Karen, what have you kind of been thinking of the Best of Super Juniors as it's kind of getting its start going right now?
Now, you know Sho's my boy, right?
Yep. Yes, I do.
For 4 years, that boy's been my boy.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Togo really went evil, copy, paste onto Sho. I don't need that man using chairs and wrenches and all of House of Torture to beat people when he was one of the final four on his own last year.
Mm.
It hurts me to know that Sho is cheating more than ELP is.
Well, it's not
and
cheating.
He
it's,
won
it's,
two
it's getting greater.
Super J-Cups by cheating his way to the finish.
Nah, they're called the House of Torture. Those are implements of torture. It's entirely within their
It's means. Torturing my heart to watch it. It's painful. Because the boy...
The dude's got tactics.
He's got talent. He doesn't need to be... like the only. There's no junior in House of Torture besides Sho.
No, Dick Togo's a junior.
By height only.
I heard the dude gets away and not his on
I
his
told
knees
you, I'm gonna so get into a fight with Dick Togo.
No,
there.
I know.
He's ruining my son.
it's like those dudes who get really sweaty so they can cut weight just so they can get in like one lower class, you know.
Karen, what you're failing to see.
Save big on brunch for mom. All in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's his he's learning... his more creative offenses. That's what you're failing to understand here. He's expanding his repertoire.
Offense, but yeah. I want him to do it on his own.
Yeah.
I want him. If
what did somebody
to,
pick up the chair for?
If he's going
for
to be a murder machine doesn't have like a posse.
But, No, but a murder machine has many parts.
Mm-hmm.
Gears, there you go. Dogs, you know.
Sometimes, and hell, sometimes you need.
It. I hate it.
You know? Sometimes you need some. Sometimes you need a maintenance guy to come in there with a wrench and just tweak some stuff.
Ross could have waited for that when he was.
Wow, Ross, that was pretty good.
Yes. What can I say?
You should write music.
I can see where Karen is coming from, because I do feel bad for the Roppongi 3K fans who
have a murder machine jingle rock.
Oh, wait, is Roppongi 3K still around?
No, but
there's no Roppongi 3K fans.
But that's the problem. There are people that were emotionally deeply invested in Sho and Yo, and now Sho has gone to the dark side completely. I mean, don't get me wrong. Before he was mad, now he's got Dick Togo straight up choking people out. And Yo has not been able to get any momentum started yet in this tournament.
There's and a so dick it, running around choking people.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, Ross, can you pause in between sentences where you talk about Dick and the fake joke?
Jeez, oh man. No! But,
listen, the murder machine's gonna murder. It's what he does. Like, you can't call a dude the murder machine and then not let him murder. You know.
Yep. And he's been murdering. I mean, like you gotta
get your hands dirty sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
No, and quite frankly, after seeing like the entire House of Torture in the ring at the end of night one, where it's when you can really see the whole group as they are now. Man, as I feel like Evil is leading the group, but man, Sho is that front man right now. Sho is like he feels like the center of House of Torture at the moment. Maybe part of it's because it's Best of Super Juniors, and they're letting him have that moment. But it does feel like this is Evil and Sho's group.
Well, at least Sho won his. So you know, there's that.
And hey, there's still time for Evil. There's still time for everyone. There's a lot of tournament left to go. But yeah, it does. It's hard to watch, but I'm also also just excited about the fact that Sho is working smarter. You know what I mean? Because like last year, he worked very hard. He made it to the final four. Yeah. But this year, if he can, you know, save some wear and tear by getting a little bit of help, that might be what gets him to finally. Because then he's not as tired by the end. I can see
Karen's frustration.
Yeah. No, of course.
I can see the hurt that she's going through with her man, with her boy, with her son. But you know, we talked about this last year, Karen, that for him to change pace, for him to expand, to grow, that he would have to turn a page, a chapter. And I think this was the chapter. In this chapter is a little dark. There's some dark pages, you know, and I feel this is a way for him to still be like, you know, he was like, okay, let's in terms of Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. You got the Jedi. He's learning the light, the way of oh shit, I'm going blank here. Of the good,
you're,
good
you're turning him into Anakin Skywalker, right?
Yes.
Now. So
he must come to the dark side to learn all the way, mm-hmm. and then
he could get pulled back towards the middle if you have to. Maybe he overshot a little bit. You know, maybe, but that's where you learn. You learn in the dark, you know, and then bring some of those tools with you back to the middle a little bit.
You got to be yin and yang. You got to have a balance, and he's got to learn the dark ways. Karen, your boy, he's going to school right now.
I know.
And he's got to fucking win.
No.
Right?
That's a good point.
You can't come to the dark ways and keep losing.
Yeah. Don't work that way.
That's not the point of this class.
All I'm saying is House of Torture formed and Yujiro beat Ibushi. So I feel like Sho with House of Torture behind him can really do some crazy, crazy stuff. And again, I've said this many times. I've said it about Evil. I've said it before. Bullet Club is at its best when it's breaking people's hearts, and right now Sho's breaking a lot of hearts, and I feel like it's a nice kind of central point to this Best of Super Juniors. But like I said, El Desperado not having the easiest time. He's fallen to Sho. He's fallen to Taiji Ishimori. So Bullet Club definitely a thorn in his side right now. Ishimori got also kind of coming back from behind. He lost to Kanemaru, as is tradition, in the opening night after he really believed in Ishimori because he got that New Japan Cup win over Kanemaru. It looked like things were finally going to turn around for Bone Soldier, but unfortunately it didn't. But hey, now he's got a title match he can cash in on Desperado when this tournament's over. So things starting to look up for Bone Soldier. But let's talk about Tag League. We got we're one night into Tag League so far. A lot of new teams this year, so to speak. Whether it's folks like
Naito. Old new teams.
Well, I was gonna bring up Tenzan and
throwbacks.
Kojima.
There you go. Yep. Throwback teams. But I like that better.
Yep. No, you definitely got the throwbacks in there. You got Great Bash Heel. You got Tenkozy. You got some folks that have some real serious Tag League credentials behind them. But then you also got Bebop High School, Yano and Hiroshi Tanahashi. Then you've got you got Blue Tigers, Yuji Nagata and Tiger Mask, and hell, even Naito and Sonata are technically a newer tag team. They've had more success than the rest of the new tag teams, but this is, I believe, their either first or second G1 or Tag League tagging together. So it definitely, or maybe it's it. Yeah, it, so it definitely feels like you've got some fresh blood, you've got some old blood, and then you've also got. You got Dangerous Techers, you got G.O.D., you've got you've got last year's winners, and so it's creating this kind of like generational affair. I don't know, Tom, you and your brother came in just like a house of fire against GBH the other day. Like, you just beat the snot out of Hanma and Makabe. What did you?
Little payback. Yeah, the last time we saw him wasn't too. That was a couple of years ago, right? A few years ago. So it was nice to get a little payback on that, a little receipt for the past.
Yeah, you know, sends a pretty chilling message to the rest of the block if you're gonna, you know,
well, the rest of the old people in our block.
Exactly. No, dude. I'm just saying. You nearly put Honma through the mat with the gun stun. He almost went through the mat. So like,
my brother almost decapitated him.
Yep.
On a damn rope, man. Poor Honma.
Oh, poor Honma. But yeah, it's
a man can't already move. Shit.
by the end of the he's gonna need a vacation by the end of this. Man. By the end of this tournament,
his great grandkids are gonna feel it.
Yeah, absolutely. But Karen, what have you been kind of thinking of the Tag League side of this dual tour that New Japan is on?
All right, so G.O.D. aside, Tama, you and your brother need to watch out for Dangerous Techers because the All Suzuki Goon match. Was fire. It was zero F's given. I've never seen Taichi run to a ring and throttle anyone the way he came at Taka. It was, I was like, oh, and then Suzuki's just like, all right, let's go. Zach didn't even get his jacket off, and Suzuki's beating him down like by the front door.
Yo, so, let me tell you something.
So I was like, oh my gosh.
Taichi will never fucking do that shit to me. Hell nah. But,
I was gonna say, that,
I never seen Taichi that fired up before.
No.
But that's my concern.
it felt like, it didn't feel like a match. It felt like Taka was getting jumped back into Suzuki-gun. They're like, you've been gone for a while. We're going to beat you up. Make sure that you can still take some lumps. Then after Taichi knocked him out with the Black Mephisto, they brought him back to his feet and were like, hey, we're all friends again. Everything's great. Suzuki-gun walked out to their marching theme. And so like,
It was
touching.
It's exactly like that. Got to jump back in. Mm-hmm. that's what happened. Blood in, blood out. Well, he got blood back in.
Oh, yeah.
That was parking lot unsafe level of. I was just like, oh,
no way in hell Taichi would ever do that shit to me. Don't you worry, Karen.
You better knock on some wood in that hotel room.
Man, that was some NXT 1.0 parking lots, you know, shit going on up in there.
I was just like sitting there. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't have enough coffee for this. This is the first match of the night. And then my soft spot.
I don't know if that means anything for like future shit. Cause that was personal. That was different.
That's what I'm saying.
It was personal.
Like, no, don't give me the same thing. You know, like if I, you know, if me and a friend get into it, you know, and it's personal, that's a different thing than some stranger on the street. I don't know.
Well, and that's
not that you're a stranger on the street to these people, Tom. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I don't think. Do you got something personal with them that we don't know about?
Like, hey,
you
know?
That was a personal infraction type situation that they're dealing with. And we all saw that. I'm sure a lot of the Japanese fans, they all saw that. Mm-hmm. And like I said, Taiji will never do that shit to me.
Yeah. What? That was my larger point, was that, like, don't get me wrong, Dangerous Techers has their history with GOD. They're going to come after you, but I don't think they're going to try it. It's not going to be a gang reinitiation like it was with Taka. Like, that was a specific 20-minute ceremony. It wasn't a match. It was a ceremony welcoming Taka back to Suzuki-gun.
Right? Like the 20 minutes of that was their match, and 19 and a half of it was them kicking Taka's ass.
Now Tai Chi is also blood type O according to the NJPW website.
Yeah.
So I rescind. Maybe you should watch out for his ass. I'm telling you. There's something weird going on. Blood type no.
Blood type no. But yeah, it definitely an oddly touching start to tag. Like, because like Karen, I was like clutching my pearls for most of the beatdown. But then when they were like, yeah, we're all friends, and they left the marching theme song, I was like, oh, that okay, good for them. You know, like it kind of warmed my heart in the aftermath. Once you had the full context. But yeah, and then like we said, there has been some damn fine matchups in Tag League. You've got to be taking on Nagata and Tiger Mask, which I feel like they're a wild card because they weren't a tag team really before this, and now they're just kind of they've been
how
out
wild
here. Like,
can they really get though?
That's going to be the question, because they got the kicks. They're gonna be looking to come back from that loss to Tenkozy. So like
they ain't gonna be against us. Don't look towards us for that comeback, damn it.
I'm trying to be the objective one here, and even I'm like,
we'll send you the retire bill real quick.
Yeah, I'm like, it's gonna be an ape shit through the mat. I don't know. We'll see how that goes down. But,
come on, man. Tiger Mask is a junior weight. Come on, man. I can't take that shit serious.
We've already had one KO in the tag league. We might have more.
Hey. I don't care if he's a champ, man. He's damn near 60 years old, and he's a junior weight, man. I can't take that shit serious. Come on.
Yep.
Come on. Hey, can I be right about that?
Oh, absolutely. No, you're spot on. Like I said, there's only so much of a... There's only so much I can do.
Agree with me, just kiss my ass, man.
But let's see. But let's talk about the goofiness of Tag League, because I want to bring Karen in on this to kind of like help enlighten the viewers a little bit, because I was as confused as many when Yano and Tanahashi showed up dressed like two high school street toughs. They had the black jackets, they had the slicked back hair, they weren't quite going full sloppy steaks, but they were going, they had a pretty damn different look. Karen, talk to us about Bebop High School, the apparent inspiration for Yano and Tanahashi's outfit.
This will be the only time you ever hear me call Tanahashi Hiroshi, because I will never call that man Hiroshi to his face, ever. So there is a comic and an anime graphic novel and a live action film called Bebop High School. It's from 1985, but it's one of the more iconic retro
I was gonna say
stories,
because like I felt like I recognized the style more than I actually recognized the reference.
Yeah, so the premise is that these guys are street thugs that go to a really rough high school that used to be a very prestigious high school, but throughout the years it's gone down its prestige. So these, you know, they're wearing traditional gakuran, which is the traditional school uniform that's based off of the military design. But kids who are, you know, the rougher kids, they would either like add length to the back of the jacket, or they would wear it open with like a t-shirt underneath it. But the main two characters of that series are Hiroshi and Toru. Okay. And they pick fights with everyone. So it's one of those things where there's like, you know, there's the nice girl in their class. It's always like, oh, Hiroshi, Toru, you don't need to do that. And they're all just like, no, we're tough, yada, yada, yada. We're going to do it this way. So when they got put together as a random tag, either last year or sometime earlier this year, all like a lot of the Japanese fans are talking like, oh, it's Hiroshi and Toru, it's Hiroshi and Toru. So when they got announced as a tag league team, they went on Yano's YouTube channel and joked about, well, what if we decide to do a little throwback and be like Hiroshi and Toru with the big pompadour hair and, you know, like the rough kid posing, like all of the things they were doing in the ring is very stereotypical, like Japanese rough kid behavior. Or what they call Yankee behavior, which is like, you know, our version of like street thugs.
Wow.
So it's fun because they're having fun with it and it makes the pairing of the two of them seem less odd couple.
Yep.
Because they have that long history in the
Dojo. Yeah, but they got to take the coats off eventually and then they're just the odd couple again.
but they're also wrestling also differently.
Also, I only respect Yano.
Or Hiroshi. Oh my God. Tanahashi is leaning.
I call him Hiroshi. I call him Hiroshi right to his face.
Oh, no.
No.
Give him a big old, give him a big old kiss on the cheek.
He's leaning into more of Yano's behavior by being sneaky, by being a little gritty. Like, we're going to see an ace. Yeah, they're probably not going to win World Tag League. I'm resigned to that. But they're at least going to have a good part of my language. They're going to have a good fucking time doing it.
Yep.
And that's what's important. Well, I don't swear very often on this podcast, but that's where it is. Hiroshi makes me swear.
You made it count. You definitely made it count on this
you
one.
You used your one. It was a good one.
That was my one for the show.
You bought a vowel.
But
I was going to say, I mostly only respect Yano now as an amateur wrestler. I think he did really well, you know. And really, really kicked some ass there. Got some good points. But this kind of tag, if they won, I wouldn't be surprised. Only because they're such a wild card, it seems like almost too stupid to not succeed.
No, it's
the wild card. I definitely think they're the wild card.
They're more of a wild card than.
But if I had to put money, if I was desperate for cash and I had to put money down on a weird bet like that, that would be the one. That'd be the wild card I put my money on.
They're the ones that I would put money on still being a tag team from time to time after Tag League. Like, I don't know how often Nagata and Tiger Mask are going to officially tag together, but like, it feels like Yano and Tanahashi have, it feels like they're really gelling with this. Like, there was that certain spark to the way that they were playing around in that first Tag League match. Like, I hope they keep it up. I hope this isn't like a one-off, hey, this was opening night, let's have some fun. Like, Tanahashi kind of looked like Bono during from the 80s. Yano, the look really works for Yano. Like, he had the slight edge to him. Like, it just, I dig it. And I also like the fact that Yuji and Tiger Mask are both wearing blue. Like, it does feel like the odd couple teams are making that effort to be actual teams as opposed to just kind of thrown together.
Yeah, I like that.
And that's definitely made this tag league just that much more interesting, just that much more fun. And I'm excited to see where we go. Like I said, 4:30 a.m. on the 17th will be the next night of World Tag League. It'll be live on New Japan World. I'll be covering it for WrestleZone. Karen will probably be awake. We'll all be enjoying it in some form or the other. But let's very briefly, since we've talked Tag League, we've talked Best of Super Juniors, we've talked Battle in the Valley, let's talk about AEW Full Gear. Because like I said, Kenny Omega, no longer the AEW champion. He has been dethroned by Hangman Page, as many predicted and many hoped that Hangman Page would. But not only that, AEW had a bittersweet debut, if I'm going to be completely honest. They brought, right before the main event, they brought out Jay Lethal, who, if anyone knows about the career of Jay Lethal, this is a guy who's been a Ring of Honor lifer. This is a guy who he even said that he wanted to end his career in Ring of Honor, and so him coming over to AEW does kind of cast that pall over the Ring of Honor news, especially the way he was talking in the post-scrum. It sounds like he really thinks the doors are starting to close over there. I'm gonna throw you, John. What'd you think of Jay Lethal debuting in AEW and kind of what this means for Ring of Honor, maybe, possibly, who knows?
I know everybody wants Charlotte to go over to AEW. Hold on, this is related. And I'd like to see her and Jay Lethal do the recreate the him and Ric Flair gimmick, you know?
Yep. Okay, yeah, no, if you haven't seen it, Jay Lethal does a damn fine Ric Flair impersonation. Look up the video.
In my opinion, the only person who should be Ric Flair anymore, but that's just me. We don't got to get into that, though.
No, we had...
it's too close to the end of the podcast for that shit.
No, so, but let's go back into it.
Jay Lethal's a talented fucker. And listen, he puts in the work, not just, you know, he puts in the character work. And he's good on stuff like the being the elite and all the extra crap, you know, all the extra ancillary auxiliary footage, you know, features, all the special features. He's good in that shit too. I think he's incredibly valuable. It's a shame that, you know, if the thing about ROH is true, he doesn't get to, you know, fulfill his dream, but hopefully he's found a new dream, you know.
Well, no, like this is it. I don't think that this is a problem for Lethal. It sounds like Lethal's very happy to be heading over to AEW. Everyone in Ring of Honor is free to work for other companies because they've been released from their contracts. It's just as someone who has been kind of like, well, if they're coming back independent, maybe it's going to be okay. Like I have to admit, over the past couple of weeks, I've kind of been like Homer Simpson in that episode of The Simpsons where he's like, it's okay. The pig's okay. It's just kind of speeding down the hill. It's okay. It's just flying through the air. It's okay. You know, and like Jay Lethal showing up in AEW is one of those things that kind of makes me go, I think they will come back for Supercard of Honor, but we will see what the new ROH is going to look like. Cause he was the definition of an ROH lifer. And so if he's out and doing business elsewhere, it seems like other people are going to be soon as well. It was just announced
that Jonathan... But going to AEW doesn't stop you from doing other stuff half the time anyway. So.
No, and again, if ROH is going through the truly independent form that they are going into, it's entirely possible that anyone can be on ROH TV coming in April, because it's just going to be about who's available. And so it's not necessarily a nail in the coffin, but it felt like one. I mean, if you looked at the reaction to people when Jay Lethal walked out, it felt like people going, ROH is ROH is against the ropes at the moment.
But you know what though? There's not a better, you can't find a better herald than Jay Lethal at least to deliver your bad news.
Exactly.
At least it'll be fun, right?
It's good news. It's bad news wrapped in good news. So I can't hate on it too much. Karen, what did you kind of think of the ROH situation now that Lethal is over in, and also I should add to this, Jonathan Gresham just announced he's starting his own promotion on January 22nd, I want to believe. It's called Terminus. It's going to be apparently very grappling based. Go ahead, Karen.
The only thing that bums me out about Jay Lethal being at AEW, not that I'm against him having job security or whatever, it just sucks that it seems he can't be at Final Battle, which could be the final big show that's guaranteed for Ring of Honor. Like, I know they're talking about, you know, getting a restart in quarter two, starting with Super Card of Honor in like end of March, beginning of April. But someone who's a legacy talent for them and has worked as long for them as he has, it's not telling, but it just kind of bums me out because he's one of the people I would have expected hell or high water, definitely there. But if he's found a home in AEW and they're paying him his worth and his family's taken care of, great.
Exactly. Yeah. No, this isn't.
That's all you can ask for anybody that signs anywhere.
Exactly. And especially if the Ring of Honor situation is the way it is, he needs to get work somewhere. And so like, I can't hate on it. It's just one of like John, I think John put it best. It's good news and it's bad news. It's bittersweet. All wrapped into one.
It's like when you're a dog and you're getting your heartworm pills. They put the pill in the bacon, you know, around the bacon, so you eat it. Well, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. No. It's a spoonful of sugar. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, just a correction on that Grissom show. The Terminus is actually January 16th of next year.
16th. Right. I'm sorry. 16th.
And it's called
January
Terminus, 16th. And it's in Georgia, where
in Atlanta,
with like Walking Dead takes place with a thing called the Terminus, where they eat people. So I don't know what the hell they're doing at this thing.
Yeah,
it sounds lit.
It sounds great.
If there's a barbecue, I'm skipping it.
Yeah, God, if you go, don't eat the concessions.
Yeah,
but it should be cool.
It's going to be sponsored by Soylent. I'm excited to see what Jonathan Gresham does with his own promotion. Like he was one of the guys that was really championing the return of the Pure Division. And it sounds like Terminus is going to basically be a Pure Division company. So I'm on board. I'm
more,
sold.
More jobs. That's what's important, right? Yep.
As Thomas said, January 16th is when Terminus debuts. But yeah, Jay Lethal not going to be at Final Battle. It does kind of add that twinge to it. But let's talk about some of the other stuff that happened at Full Gear. Let's talk about Hangman Page doing the cowboy shit, winning the title, apparently getting the approval from the Bucks while doing it. It was just a warm, feel-good moment. What'd you think, Karen?
Well, you know, when we talked about this previously, I was all in on the cowboy shit.
Yeah.
I've waited for 2.5 years for Hangman Page to do the thing, and he finally did the thing. Now, getting the nod of acknowledgement and support from the Bucks, I think that means there is some trouble under the surface for the Elite. They're going to have something is afoot.
I was going to say, because you've not only got the Bucks nodding in agreement with Hangman Page, you've also got Adam Cole running around posting photos of him and the Bucks being like, hey, we're the best three men in the world right now. So there does feel like, I don't know, it feels like Kenny Omega is kind of getting phased out of the Elite very, very quietly. I don't know. We'll see what happens on Wednesday. John, what did you think of the Full Gear main event?
Actually, I didn't see it.
Oh, okay.
But well, I can tell you what I think. But you know what, though? I saw it on Twitter.
Okay. Right, yeah, absolutely.
But let me tell you about the thing about Hangman Page. I feel like it sucked that it took him this long. Being an early supporter, he should have been given more opportunity. Being a person who put his dick out online like all the others did, but didn't really get that EVP spot, didn't really get, you know, all the other shit that everybody else got, you know, got kind of strung along. Good for him. Good for him. Finally, you know, finally getting his due. I was a big fan of him when he was in NJPW. I thought he was pretty fucking rad. And he continues to be so. And the fact that he won's fantastic. So I didn't watch it. I wanted to support my boy, but, you know, I had baby stuff to take care of. So.
Oh, no, absolutely. And it was an expensive show in North America. So I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, how dare you take food out of your baby? How dare you feed your baby? But it definitely... It was a damn fine match, and I kind of disagree. I think it needed to take 2.5 years for Hangman Page. I think that if he had been the first AEW champion, it wouldn't have smelled right to people. Like, I think he could have carried the belt, but I think
issue when everybody else did it.
No, but here's the thing, Page.
Do you think this was the right spot for him to take it?
Yes, because he is the first AEW champion to not hold a world title anywhere else.
No, I mean, like, this Full Gear show, do you think this was the moment, the perfect moment?
Because, hell, the whole reason the idea of Full Gear came from the fact that Hangman Page was trying to get in full gear shape. He wanted to look good in his trunks for the first Full Gear event. Mm-hmm. And so Full Gear has always kind of been his event. Last year, he lost to Kenny Omega, and so I think this felt right. I think this felt like the right time for him, simply because I think if he's the first AEW champion, it's our friend is a champion, so that way he can feel better about not being executive vice president.
Who was the first champion, Russ?
Chris Jericho.
He wasn't their friend.
No, I mean,
I'm saying it's almost worse just to give it to Chris Jericho. Like,
no, because Jericho
thanks for joining us.
Here's Jericho was their Hollywood Hogan. He was their guy to bring in people that might not have been Bucks or hell, even NJPW fans to come try out AEW.
Yeah.
And so I will always stand by Jericho was a good call. I think Moxley was the right call to beat Jericho. And hell, I think and part of this is because, hell, Tony Khan has already said he had his first four champions planned out. I like this lineup. You got Chris Jericho, who, when he signed with AEW, was kind of the hook. He was the hook. Then you had Jon Moxley, who was the second hook. Then you had Kenny Omega, who, let's face it, a lot of AEW fans had wanted to be AEW champion from the go. Like, he was supposed to be the franchise player. And now the franchise player has been beaten by the guy. He's been beaten by the cowboy. He's been beaten by the guy who, when they announced AEW, Cody Rhodes had a Double or Nothing logo on his phone. The Bucks had Double or Nothing logos on their phones. The first person to ever show us the AEW logo was Hangman Page in that first video. And so, like, there is, it feels like the past 2 years have been about quietly making Hangman Page the center. And now, in the past, like, 6 months, people have said, he's the center of the company by now. Let's put the title on him. And then you have that 6 months of people going, when does he get it? When does he get it? And then he goes on paternity leave. And I think they strung us along just enough that moment really hit for me. I don't know. If I'm crazy, jump on in and tell me. But it hit
Russ,
right for me.
For the 100th time, yes, you're crazy, but you're also not wrong.
Okay. No, fair point. Fair point.
I was there when they announced AEW in Jacksonville. I drove up from Orlando. Yep. I was there and I saw the excitement that Hangman had about that being the happiest first day of work for him.
Mm-hmm.
But as a fan of Hangman Page, for me, 2.5 years was too long because I lost interest in AEW as a whole by mid-2019 because I kept seeing him getting passed over for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, last year when he was going for full gear against Kenny, I think that's when it was, I was like, oh, all right, I'll give it another try. And then it didn't happen again. And I'm just like, no.
Yeah, I think listen, it doesn't matter. Could have, should have, would have. He should have stayed. He didn't. Now he's here. He's got the championship. Good for him. That's all this.
I see where Karen's coming from. I was kind of thinking down that line, but then when Ross explained his version, I agree with both.
Yeah.
As somebody who hasn't been keeping up with the product, and just kind of keeping to mainstream and seeing what comes up. I don't know if it made. And I can see people talking about it, but I thought it'd be more. That's why I asked the question, was this the right spot to do it in? Because I feel like it should have been on a bigger what's their biggest show? What would be their biggest show to
put All out?
I mean, well, but that's the thing. Because they only have 4 pay-per-views a year, like every show can, like, it's not like WWE where they've got 4 big shows and then a bunch of filler pay-per-views. Like each of their pay-per-views are supposed to be the big, like, it blow off to whatever has been going on for the past, like, what it would be like 3 or 4 months between pay-per-views. And so maybe this would have hit better if it was in Chicago at All Out. Maybe it would have hit better if the match had kind of had that Kenny Omega, you know, 30-minute classic. Because it was, I will admit this, more of a moment than a match. Like, I think the match was good. The moment Hangman Page winning was better. Whereas
if they'd done this 2-year buildup, it should have been on a grand stage. Because that's a 2-year buildup. If they've been stringing people along for this long, I think they should have, like, if they're, you know, all this time, 2 years is a long time for a storyline.
Yep.
And if you're going to, like, blow it up, like, you string, and then you start building to that big one and then bang, but you need, because you're changing, your front man is Kenny and you're giving the baton off to somebody else. And if this is the guy that you've been building, he's going to be the face. I think it should have been bigger. I think this should have been like, gotten people, you know, the 2-year storyline. Yep. That's a long ass storyline.
I didn't have the confidence in them to actually do it, which is why I didn't get full gear. I was I wanted to watch it and I wanted to watch it happen, but I'm just like, I can't drop that money and be angry at the end of the night. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like it was just like, I didn't want to go to bed angry after it. I was like, no, I can't. And it is what it is. It happened though, but.
No, and this is valid as hell, because, like, I said, it was more of a moment than a match, and I think a lot of AEW fans wanted the match more than the moment, and I don't think they got that. I'm with you. I kind of feel like Paige is kind of stuck in that Naito role right now, where they got, like, I think Naito, they got so used to kind of using the chase on him that now that he's got the belt, he's got a lot more proving himself to do than I think he would have if it had been that big moment that y'all said.
Who has been his like adversaries? Who has been like the people that he's been like has good stories with?
Himself. That's been kind of the problem with Hangman Page right now. He doesn't have a feud. His feud has been with his own self-confidence. And so where that,
yeah. What? So you throw a guy up there who hasn't have a, who doesn't have a story with nobody else to be your front man. He what was the gauntlet for him to get up there? What stories? Because then when he's a champ, now he's got to create. Now he's got to like, who's after him to come after him? Oh, well, this guy, well, him and him had this battle, da 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 da. You don't have that. It's an empty trailblazer, you know, like behind it, there's nothing coming with him. He just went up there. So now he has to like, he has to make people, but to, you know, he should have had stories because then the trail effect after each wrestler should have been like lined up behind him. He's got to fight this guy off because they went, they had this backstory, this. He, 2 years is a long ass time to run a story, and then
the longest not part have, besides himself, it was Kenny, who he just finally beat after a year. So it's, they also need to consider giving him a long run against credible opponents. Yeah. Well, like, and you can't just hot shot the title off onto like Daniel Bryan all of a sudden. Like,
well, but
the,
and
there needs to be more to it.
Yeah.
And that is one, it does feel like they might, if Danielson is his first defense, and I'm hoping he is, I really don't want to see a short Hangman Page run, that could help legitimize him. But I am with you that he is kind of behind the eight ball if it's up to his opponents to make him, as opposed to his title defenses making him. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be up to Danielson to really make Hangman Page feel like the champion. Because we all kind of knew that Kenny Omega was going to lose this one. You know, like, it had been telegraphed for so long. I mean, don't get me wrong, people had their doubts, but it was telegraphed for just enough that, like, it feels like they had this two-year story, and now I have no idea what the next 2 years is going to, like, it's not that we're looking at another month of story, it's what's the next 2 years going to be, because apparently that's the arc that they're working on, and so, like, it's gonna be a real uphill battle.
So you're gonna have him go against Danielson. They have no story. This is just like a firework, pop. But that isn't like there's no like meat. You know, there's no like juice.
The booking is like a kid playing with action figures. Like, oh, I'm gonna grab my Hangman Page action figure and just bash him against Danielson action figure, and like that's the fucking match. It's not. There's gotta be story. Otherwise, what the hell is going on? Just, you know, I'll just watch UFC or some shit.
Well,
actually, they have stories. So shit.
Yeah, no, and that is the, and as we saw,
stories.
And as we saw with Danielson versus Miro at Full Gear, there is a limit to the Danielson Dream Match tour right now. Like, it didn't seem like people were really popping for Miro versus Danielson the way that I think a lot of people thought when that match was announced. And I think part of it's because there was no story. The story was it's the tournament final. But it's also like the third tournament final that AEW's done like this year. They have a world title eliminator tournament every 3 months. And so it's not like New Japan where each tournament has its own flavor, has its own kind of vibe. Like the New Japan Cup is different from the G1, which is different from any other tournament that New Japan's doing. Whereas with AEW, they're like, all right, here's another 8 guys that are going to fight for an eliminator tournament.
And is Paige just going to be a vehicle to hand it over to Danielson to finally like to put him, shove him up at the top?
Well, but that's the thing, is I don't know if this is about Danielson's first loss, or I don't know if it's entirely possible that MJF is having a very good year. It could be that the inevitable clash could be Paige versus MJF, maybe not this year, but by 2024. That would be
infinitely more interesting.
There would be a story there, especially with the idea that Hangman Page is supposed to be the young upstart of AEW. He's the center of the promotion, yada yada yada. Whereas MJF has kind of made a case for himself as the actual young upstart, as the actual blue chip prospect. So there are some meaty places, but none of them are ready to be eaten yet. Like, everything's still on the grill. It feels like. We've got kind of a filler episode of AEW coming up this week. Like, it's Danielson versus Evil Uno. Like, it feels very much like a PWG show or something, where it's going to be like, thank you for enjoying Full Gear. We need to figure out what's going on. So here's some matches. This is from someone who liked the pay-per-view. I enjoyed the pay-per-view, but I'm with you both. I think they are behind the eight ball for the next, I think they did fine for the past 2 years, but now we're apparently starting another 2 years or another 3 years or in however long.
And this they're about to go into this realm of without the Bucks, without Kenny Omega, what was supposed to be the foundation. And mm-hmm. so who they've been building, I like MJF. I think mm-hmm. MJF has been doing a lot. Darby Allin is solid. Mm-hmm. So there is upcoming stars, you know. We'll see.
But the question is going to be is if those stars are ready to take that role from the Bucks, from Omega, from all these guys.
Ready or not, the problem is they also have Shiny Complex where they go, oh, look, dude from WWE, Pluck, put him straight up just in a main storyline. Ooh, Pluck, mm-hmm. put him straight up. And it's like, dude, like you guys said you were going to be different. You said you were there to bring up, you know, to bring up indie talent. You were there to build something. That ain't what you're there for. You're there to dream book your own damn matches that you want to see. And it's fine, great, but at least tell people that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, at least say. And then they got this whole style. You know, I'm gonna piss off a lot of people. Fuck it.
Go for it.
Then they got the whole, oh well, you know, we're gonna do real. You know, they call themselves sports entertainment. We're wrestling, and we're gonna have stats and wins and losses matter. Do they? Have they? What's going on with that? Right?
No, it
don't adjusting get, to what they said.
Mm-hmm. But don't say it.
Well, but yeah. and this is something that I feel like people have been calling from the beginning of AEW that it is more WWE with, or it to be fair, if you look at the roster, it's NXT with a new coat of paint.
It's somebody's freaking Twitter, Tumblr, role play fucking webs, whatever it is, you know, where the guys make up their own.
It's PWG with an NXT budget.
It's an e-federation.
Yes.
With real people.
I'll say this. I wasn't sure what they were going to like represent coming out to America and starting this whole thing for the past 2 years. They cater to the smart marks.
Yep.
And they're killing it.
Mm-hmm.
They fill a niche mm-hmm. that WWE and you know New Japan was supposed to come in and kind of run with that, but you know they past 2 years they took it and ran with it. I think that's their
business. That's fine.
And I think
also,
that.
But also, hold okay. on. They have a television network to convince now, which is coming up soon. And they got to keep pulling numbers because those people don't care how cool Danielson is. Those people don't care how cool Adam, you know, Cole is.
To be fair, though, it sounds like some of them do. Like, it's based on, and again, this is based on the stuff that Tony Khan's saying. When he was talking to TNT about bringing in Nick Gage, people actually went, hell yeah, bring in Nick Gage. They knew who he was. They wanted to see him, whether it's because of the Vice documentary or because they were watching GCW.
And that's fine. I don't care what he says. I'm more worried about the numbers because there's an entire board of directors, not just
the
like...
But the number... And here's the thing. The numbers are fine. They already got the extension from TNT a couple of years ago. They are still at the point where I can't imagine there's any kind of like Franklin and Bash reruns that TNT could put up there that would do better numbers than AEW. This is one thing I've been trying to move away from ratings discourse just because it's getting to the point where there's a lot of like people that want to pretend that it's still the 90s. They want to pretend that the ratings are the be all and end all of how healthy a promotion is on a network. But let's be real. WWE's ratings have declined steadily for 10 years and they keep getting more money from networks because product.
But they have other business deals now like Peacock and stuff.
Yes, but that doesn't change the fact if AEW is looking into getting into streaming. And let's face it, if I'm Bleacher Report and AEW is basically saying like, hey, we're trying to put together a streaming platform, I would definitely try and hop on that based on the way a lot of people have been reacting to Bleacher Report over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And so like, I think TNT and TBS and just Turner in general seem pretty damn happy with where AEW's at. Like, don't get me wrong. I think it's still a pretty modest success, but it's pretty damn good for cable on a Wednesday night, or hell, cable on a Friday night. They're doing fine numbers.
It's enough to keep the lights on.
Yeah, and that's all you got to do.
Wasn't there like news that they were going to move them to TBS? But
yes, Dynamite
are so good. What are they doing so good? They're going to keep them on TNT.
No, they're still going to. They're still moving to TBS. That's why they have the TBS championship that's coming out.
Moving to TBS actually helps.
Yes,
boost ratings as opposed to, it's not necessarily because they're doing better. It's just because it will fit better in the programming. Yep.
And gotcha. They will also, they'll be bumped less on TBS, it sounds like, than they will be on TNT.
Yeah, I don't say there's no sports, but yeah, there's not as many, right?
But what they've added is Rampage will still be on TNT, as well as they will have, I think it's supposed to be 4 TNT specials a year, like the way that WCW did Clash of the Champions. I want to say the first one is January 8th. And so they'll still be on TNT, but yeah, they are. I'm sorry, Corey Fitz bring up Rampage is moving to TBS as well. But yeah, they're moving to TBS, which it's going to be a better fit. I think Rampage is staying on TNT because they still have the TNT Championship. I'll do some digging, but yeah, it seems like Turner's pretty happy. And ratings are. Our ratings, and
I don't get into the ratings war thing. It doesn't matter. Yeah. There's, because frankly, first of all, the WWE is never going to be quote unquote defeated. Only it may commit suicide, but it sure as hell is not going to be defeated. It's just too big. It's like McDonald's. It's like saying I'm going to open up a restaurant and we're going to beat McDonald's. Like,
well, but a better example go ahead.
No. Oh, no, sorry, Ross. No, they can be mean. They'll just take a couple of generations. Well, mm-hmm. How many years is a generation?
Exactly. Seven to ten. Give them like 20 years.
But the thing is, like, but that's only going to be their undoing. They can only take themselves down while they're just kind of come up, which they kind of are doing right now. So we'll see what happens.
But this was my big point, is I don't think WWE can be killed at this point. They can be killed in the way that WCW was killed. But I can watch every episode of WCW right now. Like, if I want to, I can find every bit of WCW programming through legal means.
Yeah, won because they're still available and they didn't have to pay a dime for it. In fact, they got paid for it. So technically, mm-hmm. That's a win. They're immortal. Yep.
All right. I finished the Google search. Rampage is staying on TNT. Rampage is staying on TNT. So they will be maintaining that presence. They will be having the specials.
But they can lose in the way of being a worse product, absolutely. But yes. I think overcoming them entirely, in every way, I don't know. I mean, I think will undo themselves. That's for sure. Like every big company has. That's
maybe. Yeah. And again, this is because I spend a lot of time watching WWF programming from 96. If they can survive 96, I'm pretty sure they can survive anything, especially as long as they're a publicly traded company.
I don't know. When I was a kid, if you told me every anchor store from the mall would be gone by the time I had my own kid, like, that's wild, right? Like, Jason,
you didn't have Shopping Town Mall. The we were on the cutting edge of dead malls in Syracuse, New York. I would have believed it by the time I was 10.
No, New Jersey has a mall like every exit.
Okay, yeah, fair. No, up in Syracuse, our malls died quick and they died fast. They're just barren.
Tom, are you wearing your own T-shirt?
Yeah, of course he is.
Why would I be wearing somebody else's T-shirt?
No,
yeah.
I don't know, man. I just noticed you're wearing your own merch. That's tight.
I said, does The Rock wear his own T-shirt? Hell yes.
Yeah. You're right. I'm sorry. You're right. I forgot. He's the gold standard.
Because, you know, I'm the Rock and all. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I've heard some people, I don't know who, but I've heard some people call you Rock, the Rock of NJPW. So, I don't know who said that, but I think it was Ross.
It could stick. No, I didn't say that. I strictly call him Dwayne Johnson now. I don't use the term The Rock.
Dwayne Johnson, all right.
Yeah, Dwayne Johnson. But
I just call him Dwayne.
Well, we've just called him. You're on first name.
I call him Lil D.
I can't say that shit too loud. He lives in driving distance.
Oh shit! That's right. That's right. You can have drones at your house in the next 30 minutes. Well, before we get John in too much trouble with future presidential candidate Dwayne The Rock Johnson, we should.
This is just episode 4 of my ongoing feud with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
It's going to be so funny when you end up being his running mate. All right. This has been a jam-packed episode. We talked Battle in the Valley. We talked Super Juniors. We talked World Tag League. We talked AEW, Full Gear, ratings, TBS, TNT, all of that kind of stuff. We will obviously be back next week. We will be in Happy Hour this Saturday. If you want to join in on the Happy Hours, head on over to patreon.com/Thomas Island. Join up to that Islander subscriber tier, and you can hang out with us every weekend. I'm sure we're going to have a ton to talk about, especially after this episode. But we'll be back next week. I'm going to throw it to you, Karen. Where can people find you if you want them to find you?
Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, and YouTube at Hey Karen Sensei.
Yep. And you're still over a post, right?
I will be doing the Tokyo Super Wars review at the end of the month.
Hell yeah. There we go. And John, where can people find you if you want them to find you?
Anybody but Dwayne The Rock Johnson, come feel free to hang out over at linktree.com/JohnSebastian, at John Sebastian on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, if you want to donate to our presidential campaign, head over to my Venmo, drop me $5, see what happens.
Oh, Lord, Rainey, I'm going to get him in trouble with the FEC.
Oh, sorry. This hashtag sponsored. Sorry.
Oh, boy. And Tama, where can people find you if you want them to find you?
Yeah, I don't want y'all to find me except for Little D. You can find me at Good Bad Guy Tama Tonga on Instagram, Tama _ on Twitter. Hit me up.
Hell yeah. Hit him up, Dwayne. I'm at Ross W. Berman IV on Twitter, Ross Berman IV on Instagram, rossberman.bandcamp for all your folk singing needs, and obviously at Thomas Island for all of your Thomas Island needs. Thank you again, folks, for joining us this week. We will be back next week with more to talk about, but until then, please enjoy your week, enjoy wrestling, and just take care of yourselves.
Thank you for listening to this week's Thomas Island. Find more great Thomas Island content like the Shotgun series, weekly happy hour Zoom calls with Tama, video versions of the podcast, and much, much more at patreon.com/Thomas Island, and visit at Thomas Island on Instagram and Twitter.